You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with writer-director Bo Burnham. You may know Bo from his comedy specials on Netflix or his roles in films like The Big Sick, but Bo has written and directed his first film called Eighth Grade, looking at the life of a young eighth grade girl as she prepares to move on to high school. In this one-on-one, Screenfish gets to participate in a special roundtable conversation with Bo about the film, and he shares about how he developed the voice for his characters, the responsibility of technology, and what it's like to communicate between generations. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
Green age movies, but I can't really think of many that tackle like the junior high age. What was it about eighth grade that, you know, made it like an interesting time for you to explore?
It was just more, like, way more exciting to me. I don't know, the stories that I would look back at and tell were always eighth grade. I don't know, I've met a lot of high schoolers now, and, like, high schoolers now seem, like, very blasé and over it. Like, they don't give a shit, you know what I mean? And they have, like, a thousand-yard stare that feels like they got from the war of junior high. You know what I mean? It feels like, because I know you're coming of age at high school, but high school is like, yeah, you're becoming an adult. When you're in eighth grade, you're literally, like, still a child and becoming a young... Like, when you're in high school, I don't think you have, like, child left in you, but when you're eighth grade, you still have, like, full-blown, like, child going on. So, I don't know, it's way more... I think the reason there are more high school movies is because we like to look back on high school, so we think about it, and we don't like to look back at middle school. So, like, we kind of block that out, so, yeah. But I've been interested in a while about a middle school movie.
In some of your interviews, you said that this started as a project about the internet.
Yeah.
How did it transform into a movie about at eighth grade, and do you feel like you managed to do what you initially intended?
I think so, yeah. Like, it's like, we set out to write about the internet. Like, what does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, but I wanted to talk about how it felt, just how it felt to me. And yeah, I think I did. Because... kids, when I tried to write about, like, someone my age dealing with the internet, it just felt so embarrassing because it was, like, it's just so hateable and, like, why is this person doing this? But when you're an eighth grader and when you're 13, you can kind of, like, we can kind of, like, forgive our behavior a little bit better. We can look at it and go, like, oh, right, like, she isn't narcissistic, she isn't self-obsessed, she's just looking for connection, she's just, like, desperate to be loved, and it's like we all are. And I think that is actually how we all are acting on the internet. We're just, like, pretending like it's something else, so... yeah, it was a way to sort of purely engage with it. Because the internet means the most to those kids, because they don't know a world before it. So it's not this other thing to them that they're living with. It's like the way that they live and always have. Yeah.
That brings up a great question. I was just wondering, who's the film for? Because it's focusing on the eighth graders, but you've also got this incredible relationship with the adults. So, like you said, you're starting to write about the internet. Was there a particular, like... group you were trying to speak to?
Me. I mean, truly, I wanted to make a movie that I liked and I wanted to see the type of movies that I like. So, I mean, it definitely wasn't for eighth graders. I mean, I hope eighth graders like it, but it's definitely not primarily for them or only for them. And if I'm honest, I think people are just about as awkward and weird as eighth graders. Like, I don't think it's that different. I was like, I'm so glad I'm not that awkward anymore. I'm like, are you sure? Like, we're all pretty awkward. But yeah, that's my hope. I hope it serves... kids and their parents in specific ways. But I also hope anyone can see themselves in her. You know what I mean? It's like... it's this sort of shitty sexist thing that's put on a lot of female stories, young female stories. It's like... it's only... it's like no one goes like, oh, Hamlet, was that only for princes of Denmark? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, everyone sees themselves in him, even if they aren't a prince or a man or a Danish or whatever he was. And I think a 13-year-old girl can be the same thing. Everyone should be able to see themselves in her, I think. A 60-year-old man should be able to. Not, you know, maybe not dispositionally, but I connect to her personally. This isn't a story about my daughter. You know what
yeah.
I mean? This is a story about me now through her. Not that it's not just about that, but I'm saying the way
no.
it personally relates to me is that.
Sure. Can you discuss the importance and the emphasis on music in the film? There's a lot of spots where it's just music.
I wanted... electronic score, because it's a digital movie, so it felt like it had to be electronic, and a lot of score in movies like this can kind of be very cutesy and sort of mandolin, acoustic, sort of plucky, oh, look at this cute girl in this world, you know, But the story, her story to her is not cute or little. So I want it to be subjective and reflect her inner experience, which is visceral and big and intense. So I wanted the music to be intense and reflect her intense experience. And Anna Meredith, our composer, is just a brilliant... It does exactly that. She writes incredibly dense, theatrical, exciting, visceral electronic music. So that was the hope with the music, to just... Because music is the great way to just sort of get people's heart rates up. And her experience of her life, even though her life on paper is like a cute little thing, it's a very intense experience. So I wanted the music to reflect that.
One of the great things to me about this movie is that Kayla sounds like a 13-year-old kid, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, the more screenwritery movie version. How long did it take you to find that voice? And was there like a scene or a moment where you felt like you really started to understand it?
That was the actual first step, was to do that. The first step was the voice of it. So I was just listening to kids talk online about themselves, you know, kids that were talking with 10 views on their channel. And my first thing I did in writing, which is transcribe exactly what they said, like every sound, you know what I mean? So I was transcribing, So what I'm trying to say is, that's what I was trying to write. Because I was watching these videos going, if this were a performance, it would be incredible. Because the way kids actually sound, like you say, is so much more complex than the way kids are written and performed. Mm-hmm. So then after transcribing, like, you know, a dozen or so, I started to write my own. And it was in that voice. So the script is written like, yeah, so the thing about being yourself is, I'm reading this off a piece of paper. Sorry. Okay. So that was the impulse, the whole movie. The movie grew out of that voice, really. Because the voice, to me, contains the whole meaning of the movie, which is the performance and what she wants to be and who she thinks she might be and what she, the gap between that. It's all there in just a sentence, in the way she's... Because that's what's interesting with kids, that when you write a kid well, you just throw out the entire point of it, which is the space between what they have in their head and what comes out of their mouth, you know? And like, why, I'm doing everything Ellen does, why don't I sound like her? Or I'm doing everything Tony Robbins, why do I sound like an idiot? Which is my current experience as well. You mean to say that too, you go like, oh, is that the right answer? It's the same thing.
Yeah, and it ends up being the beginning of the movie, like the first scene.
And that was the first thing I wrote, was the being yourself monologue, yeah.
Well, in your career, aside from YouTube, that TV show you had on MTV, I believe.
Yeah.
And through here in this film, we see their signature awkward comedy type style.
Yeah.
Why do you think this is such an effective way to tell a story? Why is comedy an effective way to tell a story that has some pretty hard truths?
Well, I think it's specifically what you're saying, awkward comedy is the way... Like, I love cringe. I just think cringing is a very high form of empathy. Like, really, it's like, if you're cringing, it means you're feeling it with the person. So I've always loved that. And I kind of just, in the movie, I'm just kind of pursuing cringe of all types. Sometimes you're cringing because it's, like, very not funny or whatever. But I just, like, how do you get people to feel with the person? And if they're squirming in their seat... that's good, because she would love to, like, people want to like bolt the theater because it's so awkward. It's like, trust me, she would wish she could bolt the situation she's in. So I don't know why it's effective. It's literally just been effective to me. It's the things I've loved that I've seen that made me feel something. And I just don't love, like, and I did it for a while and other things, but, like, I just don't love, like, clever shit where it's like the comedy's all about, like, look how clever I am and look at this cool take I have on something. The sort of awkward stuff is much more human. It's much more saying, like, it's presenting, like, I don't have this figured out. I don't know how to navigate the world, as opposed to, look how smart and cool and clever I am, which I just really got over and was sort of tired of doing.
And, sorry.
No worries.
So when you were going into the darker stuff, like what happens in the car, how did you approach making that scene seem real, but also... not too out of touch with the rest of the tone of the movie?
Yeah, it really is just trying, like, I really did approach every scene the same in terms of just trying to reflect her subjective experience. Like, I wasn't in funny scenes trying to be funny. Like, the banana scene, I'm just saying, like, we weren't laughing that. Like, I was, like, taking that very seriously. Like, because I was trying to feel with her, like, this is an awful moment of your dad catching you in this really bad thing, you know? And with the car scene, it was similarly just trying to approach it honestly. And a lot of people tell me, like, I'm so glad that scene didn't go where I thought it was going to go. But it doesn't have to go there to be bad. It doesn't have to have gone to a criminal place for it to be.
I mean, I was a girl in middle school.
Traumatic.
So many stories like that.
Yeah, yeah, and the issue with the stories themselves, you can feel like she could tell that story 6 months after the fact, and people would be like, "Nothing happened. You sat in the back seat, and you didn't touch your arm, and you said no." But when you actually sit with it, you see it's fucked up and wrong. And that's even kind of the broader, almost thesis of the movie, is that like moments that don't sound like a big deal of all different types, when you actually live them, are a huge deal. Going to a pool party is like nothing, but when you actually go to a pool party, it's not nothing.
Did Elise Fisher, does she have any input with the what happened with the character?
No, she's authoring every moment. So it's really just, she's literally just authoring every moment. Like, we're not talking about it, because like talking about it is to objectify it, and we should just be in it, you know? So that's more what it is, just in it and feeling it. And, yeah, more than it is like, I don't like talking about stuff in theory. I just like, let's just do it and feel it out from the inside.
Can you talk a little bit about the conversation between generations? Because there's some really fascinating sort of moments. You know, like you said, natural awkwardness between daughter and father. But the father is a very genuine guy. He just doesn't seem to get it.
Yeah.
And she almost doesn't know how to speak to him. And you see that through a lot of the adults. And I actually like their, you know, when you focus on the kids in the hallway, a lot of times the adults are there, but they're in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're blurred. It almost reminded me of Charlie Brown.
That's what we did, Peanuts. Yeah, that was a big input. We would say Peanuts. The adults are Peanuts.
Yeah.
Other than Dad. But even Dad is still, like, poking in from the other room and at the other side of the table.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dad is always reaching out. So I was wondering, like, but there's, he doesn't seem to know how. So, like, is there something about that balance or that tension you were trying to get to?
Yeah, I just think that's the truth, you know, and, like, that's how it should be. Like, it might be the point of it to not quite understand each other. I think the part of a parent really is, and what he kind of gives her at the end in the fire is, like, I cannot understand you in this moment. I have no idea what you're going through right now. Mm. But I understand, like, the meta you.
Yeah.
Better than you do, which is, that's sort of what my mother gave me all the time, which is like when I'd be going through shit, I'd be like, you don't know what I'm going through at all right now. And she'd be like, I don't, but I saw you go through something at 4 and then 8 and then 12. Like, I know this feels like a really new thing you're going through, but I've seen you feel this way before and you've gotten through it. So like, that is the sacrifice, I think, that like, they don't specifically know you moment to moment, but they know the overarching you that you can't, at that age, you just can't attend to, because 2 years ago feels like fucking forever ago. Yeah. And you were a different person. So,
well, and you mentioned that with generations too, because there's high schoolers are sitting there and saying, well, you're 4 years younger than me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different generation.
Yeah. And I feel that. Well, it's like the once in a generation type social innovations, like whatever, Walkman or whatever, you know, MTV, are happening every 8 months, and I feel like, so I think they still are once in a generation. The generations are just shrinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also just a loser high school boy, like, talking shit because he thinks he's cool. That's the other thing, too. And that's very much me. I very much see myself as a guy that, like, just wants to, like, talk about stuff and then doesn't realize he just hurt someone's feelings.
Can you talk about the casting process and how you got this group of teenagers together? Like, they're all incredible, especially Elsie.
Yeah, it was just, you know, a mixture of kid actors. A lot of the kids, all the extras were just from the school, from the surrounding area. Some of the day players just were ones from the middle school that we shot at. And, like, the girl whose pool that is in the pool party scene with some of her friends. And, during the audition process, I would act with them. I would do the scenes with them and just see, could they exist in a natural, vibey sort of way. And I'd have that consistent thing of being in a scene with them. And then I would know if they could do it with me, that I could, at the very last minute, pull myself out and just have them do it with each other. And it would feel like they're in sort of a world together. So, yeah. I mean, actors are my number one through 10 priority as a director. And I feel like in order to direct, I have to act with them, not even, but I'm like, I'm trying to be in it with them. So, a lot of it was just trying to make a safe environment for the kids to be free and just over and over and over and over again, give them permission to be themselves, because there's this impulse of like, I'm in a movie now and I have to be like in a movie. And it's like, no, like, let that go. Stumble, hiccup. Forget your lines and say something by mistake or stumble. Like, that's what being a kid is. So I would tell them, like, the worst thing you can do is do this perfectly. Yeah.
Okay.
Was this something you knew you wanted to direct from the start?
Yeah, I wrote it with that intention. I had written another script that I tried to get made, and it didn't happen. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to write something that I know I could direct and that I know could, in theory, get made. And then it took 3 years to get made. But it was still like, yeah, that was the intention. Was like trying to lean into whatever strengths I thought I had, which I thought like the strengths I will have will be like scene work, working with young people, actors. Like, I might not know really, I might not be a director that really knows how to direct a film, but I know young people on the internet pretty well. So if I can stay close to what I feel like I know, then I can be in decent shape.
Yeah. I think I read that you wrote the first draft like in 2014 or something like that. Considering you had mentioned how much things can change in 8 months, did you find that there were things that changed in between the
two? Yeah, every 6 months I'd have to like just revise it a little bit. But it was also kind of left open. Like, it was like more she just messages someone on something. It wasn't being overly specific because I was trying to leave that stuff to the month that we shot it and just then fill in all the details. But yeah, it was written very quickly, and the first draft was like 2 weeks, and very, very, very quickly, and then, which doesn't happen for me usually, and then, but just keeping an eye on it always as things are updating and things are changing, and I was certain I was making it for Hillary's America, too, you know, like, truly, was certain that and I was like, whoa, you know, and then the movie just felt different when we were making it, because then all of a sudden Trump was there, and felt like, whoa, this is like... Like, when she walks out at the end, it's like, oh, I really don't... When she's making that video to herself at the end, we were making it going, like, I really don't know if she's going to make it. Like, I don't know if the country makes it to when she's a senior, you know? Which was so different than when it was written. When it was written, it was going to be like, okay, so this is going to be like a sort of a subtle, sweet interrogation of this thing. Now that there's a female president, we all feel a little better about ourselves. And instead, it became like... The story became a lot more urgent when Trump was there, you know? Which was, insane.
I can't think of anything right now.
Yeah, right. Neither can I. You just say his name and all thoughts go away.
What's next? Anything else you're working on right now?
I bang my head against the wall. I'm not a great multitasker, so like once this is done, I'll just try to clear my head and
begin. You've talked a lot about the relationship with social media and using how social media keeps changing. I was wondering, do you view social media as just something that's part of their lives now, or is it something that they need to learn how to engage properly? Because, I mean, you came up through it and stuff like that, so you're a YouTube veteran now, really.
Yeah, both. No, I mean, it's there, but it's also theirs to change. So, like, it doesn't mean they can't react to it. It's just, like, I just think that older people in charge of it in Silicon Valley need to more deeply understand this responsibility they have to kids and how important this thing is and how deep it reaches into them, that it isn't just, like, some cool... marketing technique. It's like actually like the neurochemistry of an entire generation that you have in your hands. So the kids will learn that. It's more the job of the people with power to.
Right.
And if we wait until the kids to have power, we might not make it there. So like people just need to. Yeah. I really have no instructions for like kids or parents or teachers. It's more like Silicon Valley people need to fucking.
Yeah.
You know, realize what they're doing, which is they're a giant. They have like a lot of power. They need to wield it responsibly.
What's your lasting hope for the movie, like with parents and kids watching it? You said you didn't make it for eighth graders, you made it for...
Yeah, I just hope people see it and feel something. I don't want the movie to be prescriptive or tell you what to think or wag a finger or be a TED Talk. It's just like, hopefully people see it and dig it and, you know. The hope with everything is always like, you just feel a little less alone. I mean, that was the point for me to do it, just to go like, these feelings that I have that I think are so unique are not unique, they are shared by other people. So I hope, you know, a whole wide array of people can see it and see their own feelings reflected in someone that may have been like them or may have not been like them.
Yeah. Terrific.
Cool. Well, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.